So I was on Metro North today coming from Connecticut, and I had the pleasure of sitting next to a Wall Street Journal journalist.
Okay.
She does the health beat. And we just started talking shop. Obviously, what she does is very different from what I do. But, you know, it was interesting. She was very serious. And so she said, well, I guess first I'm going to ask you, have you ever thought about, like, what you will do in your dotage? Like, what you will do as in your retirement career?
At 45, I'm walking into the ocean.
I'm thinking more like 70.
Oh, well, at the bottom of the ocean, probably, yeah.
Moldering.
So me personally, I am going to find a Renaissance fair and join that Renaissance fair and be some sort of character actor in a Renaissance fair.
I love
Is this a joke or is this for real?
No, this is for real.
This is what you want
this
to
do. This is what I want to do.
Like, you have a medieval thing?
I just love a Renaissance fair. I came to it late in life, but I like want to be like, I am lady, blah, blah. Like, that's
you
want to
be 70
do.
Years old. Somewhere in the Northeast,
it's seasonal.
Presumably.
It's seasonal.
It's
seasonal.
Of course it is. So it would have to be.
So that's what I want to do. But okay.
I've never been to a Renaissance fair. That's great. Wow.
You got to take Alice. It's amazing. It's good fun. Truly, trust me. It's a freak show, but also good fun.
Okay.
You can come up to Connecticut and visit me.
All right.
So, okay. So per my conversation with
this
journalist.
I'm sure this is going
somewhere. It is. Yeah. Per my conversation with this journalist, she used to travel, cover travel. Mm-hmm. And she told me about a story she wrote, and I have found a potential career for you.
For me?
For you.
Okay.
Like when you are 70 or 80.
Uh-huh.
And that is to be a gentleman on a cruise ship wearing a tuxedo and dancing with ladies.
This is a job?
This is a job.
You get paid for doing
you
this.
You get paid for doing this.
By the cruise company
or
something?
Yes, and you actually live in a cabin.
Uh-huh.
And you dress for all of the state occasions. Like it's always for like Cunard or Regent, like a fancy.
And you walk out and you are looking for lonely ladies who need a dancing partner or something?
She showed me a video. They like, there's several of them and they stand at a certain point and then they choose a woman and they dance with them and you can't dance with one more than once. And it's a whole thing.
Oh, wow.
I just thought.
Do I have to do anything else?
No. No.
I mean, this is, I mean, come on.
This is a family
podcast. I mean, I don't want it to be entirely out of your comfort zone, but like, but I just, I mean, I don't know if you're like, love it, hate it, but I was like, I have to tell him about it at least.
Uh-huh.
And so.
I think I'll stick to my original plot.
Which is.
Which is the bottom of the ocean. You know, this is Rough Cut. I'm Alan Semich.
I'm Amy Elliott.
And we're here with Tanya Dukes. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, Tanya. We're so excited and so happy to have you.
I'm so thrilled to be here.
Why are you here? Why did you decide to come on the show?
You know, I got a lovely email from this lovely Amy Elliott lady. And
yes. No, I'm always amazed. Well, you may not have heard the show before, but anytime people have heard the show before, I'm always amazed that they then decide to be a guest on the show. That's always like a small miracle to me. So if you've heard it before, thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, I've heard it before. I'm a big fan.
Are you really?
I'm a big fan.
Is this a real thing?
No, it's a real thing.
Okay, because last week this one MF told me, I'm a huge fan. And then, you know, we were talking to this person and knew jack shit about the show.
Oh,
so
no.
I'm just.
Yeah, I didn't know who was going to be here. It was going to be you or
right.
Emily.
Mystery,
or it was a mystery.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, I'm a fan.
I love it.
I've been sitting here waiting for my invitation. So,
oh my God. I wish
I finally knew. I did something to deserve an invite.
Oh
well,
my goodness.
You also deserved your Gem Award win.
Yes,
which
you did.
Was one of the reasons why we reached out to you. Congratulations.
Yes. Thanks.
One of the many, many, many reasons that we've reached out. I mean, honestly,
yes. No,
actually.
Totally. I have a whole list of questions.
By the way, I also have, I have receipts. We have been reaching out to you for some time, lady, as well. Yeah. Oh, I have receipts.
What?
Tanya. Oh,
no.
Yes. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
I'm going to have to fire my assistant.
Oh, I'll fire your assistant. I'm firing your assistant for sure.
I have an assistant.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyone who knows, who's been following your byline, you know, for lo these 20 years or so knows that the recognition is very well deserved. And I think all of your peers in this space admire you hugely. You are one of the most likable people in our midst. And
I don't know if that bodes well for the industry, but okay.
Because Tanya's like, because I'm a raging
bitch.
Raging. Just so you know.
I know. Yeah. And you just have a great, you've got great storytelling, wonderful knack for spotting trends. And like, we can't even be jealous because it's like you're operating on a level that few of us can aspire to. So that's my hot take on what brings you here and why we wanted to talk to you so much.
I'm blushing. Thank you.
I need to ask you, because I wasn't at the Gem Awards. Mm-hmm. We did talk about your beautiful La Double J dress, and it was so good. Can you tell us about the jewelry?
Sure. You know, the dress was had a kind of mid-century Dolce Vita. There were feathers mm-hmm. involved. Mm-hmm. So I wanted something that kind of picked up on the color, picked up mm-hmm. on that sort of vibe. So I had like a giant pear-shaped solitaire diamond from De Beers.
Lovely.
And yeah, so that was kind of
nothing to sneeze at.
Like, kind of like
at.
A Liz Taylor, like
a
hello.
Liz Taylor, like I'm tagging along on the jet to Stadt or something mm-hmm. to party with them.
Not Stadt.
And so yeah, there's always maybe 16 carats or
she's
so.
She's like, hand out the award now because I've got a flight to Stadt. I have to catch.
Got to
I'm
get
doing the red eye. Let's go.
Yeah, and then some amazing earrings from the also from De Beers from the Talisman collection. So it had like a rough,
beautiful.
A combination of like rough and faceted diamonds in different colors. So it mm-hmm. kind of picked up on the.
I saw some yellow.
Palette.
Was there yellow?
Yeah, I had an armful of diamond bangles. Mm-hmm. Also,
beautiful.
Yeah. So I wanted to, you know, feel a little bit like a party girl.
That
yeah. mid-century party
yeah.
girl.
You looked gorgeous.
Thank
by
you.
The way. You looked beautiful.
Thank
I wish
you.
I saw it in person. It was like the one time I decided to stay home, but it was, you looked absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it was one of those nights where I decided to leave the all black
exactly.
behind, which
and we'll
is
get
hard
to that.
For me, but
we're going to get to that for sure. I want to talk about how you got into jewelry, because I feel that the way you got here is so interesting. You made such a dramatic pivot.
Yeah.
So I don't even know if everybody knows, but can you tell us about that?
Sure. So this career is kind of my second one. I was a lawyer for about 4 years, a corporate lawyer here in New York City. I went to law school here and then did internships here, and then after graduation started working at a firm downtown in kind of the financial district. And, you know, was, as many young lawyers are in the corporate world, was not super happy and just decided to follow my bliss, I guess, which I didn't really know what that would be, but I knew it wasn't going to be found there. So mm-hmm. I kind of took a leave of absence and traveled a bit and eventually just got an internship at Elite Traveler magazine.
Oh, really?
I didn't realize you started as an intern.
I started
wow.
as an intern. So I got that internship, and when they accepted me, I just, you know, said goodbye to the firm altogether and gave my notice. And so, yeah, I was an intern. I was an intern there for about 6 months.
Wow.
And
did they hire you?
Well, initially, no. I was working for an editor. I was an intern, so I do fact-checking, getting mm-hmm. images, like, you know, helping out the shoots, whatever, mm-hmm. what interns do. And after 6 months, it didn't look like anything was going to materialize, so I left and went driving across this country, Thelma and Louise style, with a friend. And then I got an email from the editor I was working for, and she was leaving and offered me the job.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, and then I was there for, I don't know how long, 7 years or at
wow.
least. Yeah, as
you
an
were
editor.
Like the queen of that magazine in that capacity.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's how we got to know each other.
That's how we met each other, which was, you know, long ago in a galaxy far away.
Yeah, we were babies.
We were little, teeny, cute babies.
How long ago was that exactly?
Oh, I don't like
okay,
to
we
say.
Don't have to say.
Maybe,
it,
but it
say.
Was about... It was about 20 years ago.
20
this is,
years
yes.
ago,
this is
wow.
actually
Absolutely.
My 20-year wow. anniversary mm-hmm. in kind of editorial and jewelry and all
wow.
of that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd put it like 2002-ish.
2000, I think
four.
I gave 2004.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So okay. tell us, can you take us from Elite Traveler to your, and like, you know, all, any stop along the way you want to tell us about?
Sure. Well, I was at Elite Traveler. I started out, you know, quite junior. It's a very small staff, which mm-hmm. is one of those things when you're at an independent magazine, super small staff. So started out doing all the things. It was a lifestyle magazine. I guess it still exists maybe on the web somewhere. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But so fact-checking, sourcing art, tracking samples, like all of the things that needed to be done on that tiny, tiny
wow.
staff. And so jewelry was just one of the things I did. I wrote a lot of travel. I wrote about food and spirits and all of the things. And but no one wanted to deal with the jewelry because obviously when you're doing a shoot with, you know, Harry Winston and Graff and everything else, there are logistics involved. You have to make sure the security guards get where they need to be. You have to do insurance documentation. And so I was good at that because, you know, if, after working on mergers and acquisitions, it's not really
research
rocket science.
Came easily to you. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of those sure. things. So, so I kind of adopted a lot of that work and here I am 20 years later, and that's kind of become the mainstay. But yeah, at the time it was a full, you know, I covered fashion at, I got to the point where I was doing menswear shows in Milan and going to Pitti Uomo and going to Paris to see the Dior show and all those things. So it was a lot. And at the time, you know, I was unmarried and childless, so it was okay to be on an airplane or in a hotel you. 3 months out
Lucky
of the year.
Totally.
And so I'm glad I got to do all those things. And, you know, that was the virtue of being in a very small magazine, mm-hmm. that you could do those things. There weren't seven editors over you.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I left. I was at Brides Magazine for a hot minute, and then there were layoffs there.
Can I just interject? Brides? I need to interject. At the time I was at Lucky Magazine,
yes.
While she was in the building at Brides, and it was like a big career move for you. Like the long time, you know, fashion or accessories editor had left and she came. It was like big news. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Tanya and I are bonded for life because we both lost our job on the same day.
Well, how did that happen?
Mass layoffs in the building.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I remember that day very well also because it was during, I think, bridal market week. So mm-hmm. I was out doing appointments, like, and WWD was covering the layoffs at Condé Nast. And so they were trying to find me to let me know before
it's over.
Before it's over, before someone says, oh, I heard that they were doing layoffs, when I'm like on appointments. So yeah, that was what was happening. But then after that I was freelance for a while and then was at InStore and InDesign for a while. Was a senior editor there. And then as the media landscape goes, there are again layoffs. And so since then I've been freelance, which is where I will probably
stay. Do you like being in that space?
I do. I mean, I think it's very much, you know, it's driven by what I can come up with and mm-hmm. what my ideas are. And so mm-hmm. that's really great. I mean, I think it's refreshing to, you know, when you're working at a big magazine, when I was an Elite Traveler and when I'd go to trade shows to see mm-hmm. things, you know, I always had someone from the advertising department at my side. Mm-hmm. And yes. So that was a lot of the conversation. And now I can just go and see and ask questions and learn the things I'm interested in without having to divide my attention in that way.
And amazing. Like have your face hurt from smiling because you're faking it so hard. So hard.
Can I ask you kind of what entices you about a story? What sort of stories tend to drive you and pique your interest in general?
I think it's just really the things, you know, I think the great thing about jewelry is that it's so deep and multi-layered, and there's history and culture and material. So there's so many different kinds of ways you can tap into a story. So yes, I've been kind of covering jewelry for 20 years, but I feel like I'm still just learning and still an expert. And so if something strikes me as like, huh, I didn't really know that, mm-hmm. then I always feel like, well, if I don't, then other people don't. And let's explore that idea. Or maybe someone just has an interesting background, and I think, you know, you always assume things, and sometimes when someone zigs, when you expect a zag, you wanna talk about that. So it's just whatever
you find incredible material. You find great material. I often joke that I'm the golden retriever of jewelry editors, and I would say that you are the sleekest, most elegant, softly treading cat. In our midst. Like, I see you at trade shows and events. You never seem rushed or harried or stressed. How do you manage this MO of grace and calm, like, when quite a few of us are the exact opposite of that?
Oh, that's so funny. I mean, thankfully, after being in this business for 20 years, I feel like I kind of know. I've gotten all the hacks done. You know, it's just like when you go to Vegas and you know you have to ask for a humidifier.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it's like all of the shortcuts, I think, and whether it's, you know, scheduling my appointments in a certain way so I can cover the most places in the fewest, you know, hours. It's just a function of, I think, doing that for so long. And listen, you just have to understand the limitations of what one can accomplish in a day. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to get as far as I can, and then that's it. I'm glad I've got you all fooled that I'm unharried. And
it sounds like you're able to kind of tune out those external pressures.
Oh, yeah, and I think it is, you know, essentially I'm a solo entrepreneurial person in that mm-hmm. I'm working for myself and, you know, I'm pitching my stories. Mm-hmm. And so if I get one story out of it, then that's fine. If I get 10 stories out of a trip, that's fine, too. I'm not going to... it's all kind of determined by what I can accomplish, and real life has to come into play because, you know, you're juggling kids and everything else. So,
okay.
Yeah, can't relate.
You sound broken up about that, by the way.
Yeah, it's really challenging for me to have this conversation with you about my lack of children.
Immaculate.
It's really tough. Yeah. It's really difficult. Yeah, I'm really bummed about that. I think I'll go have a cry while you guys continue this without me. Yeah, is that all right
if I
take a breather?
It's okay.
I mean, I'm just like, wow, like not how I roll at all. Can relate to the kid thing, can't relate to the like pressure and intensity. And
how old is your kid?
She is 4 now. She just turned 4.
Gosh, that sounds awful. Do you have regrets about
if
that?
If you ever try to have a child after this, we're going to like...
Oh, yeah. You're going to be like... We're throwing you a shower.
Cut.
We're throwing you a baby shower.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. It's, I have a... Andrew's boss once said it's the equivalent of like buying like a Lamborghini and just driving it off a cliff. But I don't know. His kids might be awful for all I know. So you probably don't feel that way.
I guess
way.
He doesn't listen to this podcast.
I certainly hope not.
I wanted to ask, you know, I think you're very elegant and minimal in your personal style choices. I remember you telling me about some Roland Murray dress. Do you remember that?
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
it was like Roland Murray for Gap, or like, it was something really like.
Oh,
it was,
my God, you have a better memory than I do. Like, I should find that dress.
It was an incredible dress. And I remember you just being like, it's Roland Murray for what? I will always remember you in that dress, like a black dress at some cocktail soiree. Oh, like, but anyways, like, you know, I feel like anyone who writes about jewelry well must love it on some level. And so I was wondering, when was the last time you saw something that you were like, oh my God, I love this? And how did you react in the moment? Two guesses how I react.
You know, it's funny because I think that people, when they ask me that question, sometimes they expect me to say like the biggest, most expensive stones and not that it's easy to wow people with that, but those things I think naturally lend themselves to, you know, impressiveness. And so it's easy to respond to that. I mean, for me, especially because I don't want to also only address the 1%. Mm-hmm. I love jewelry that I can afford, that maybe other people who don't have massive budgets can afford. So I get excited when I see jewelry that, you know, feels fun and cool and kind of accessible. And so that always kind of makes me excited too. I mean, I was met the designer Lucy Delius. I don't know if you've met her not too long ago, and I was just it's very kind of Victorian inspired, but like highly contemporized. I was like, oh gosh, I really want all of this jewelry. And so that kind of thing excites me too, because when I'm like, oh well, I want to put it on and walk away with it and start thinking about how I can budget for a piece. So I think that sort of thing, and again, it's like, if I feel like I really want to wear it, then other people will too. But I mean, that obviously, you know, all of the high jewelry houses I love. Last year, Boucheron's high jewelry collection was just...
Boucheron's high jewelry collection every year.
Every year.
He loves Boucheron.
Yeah, I do. I love their high jewelry. I've said this on a show many times before. I feel like they're teaching people how to do high jewelry.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And just making it feel like it's very relevant.
Yes.
To everyone, that even people who are not, you know, 55 years old and with, you know, a jet. And I think that you could be, you know...
Sometimes
a 30-year-old
it's okay
spender.
If you just have a boat.
Yeah, you know, if you just have the yacht or whatever.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a jet. Maybe it's just a yacht. Maybe you just charter, and that's okay too.
No.
Which, I mean, it's embarrassing.
It's a little sad.
Hugely embarrassing to have to charter. But, you know, it's for them too.
It's for them too. And I think that's what's beautiful about it.
I think so too. It's so egalitarian.
It's for the working billionaires.
It is, yeah. The ones who still have to hustle in these streets.
Still out there in these streets.
No such thing as a free lunch, guys. Like,
no.
Yeah. No. So, but and from that standpoint, you know, obviously, that's one of the houses that I really get excited about to see what they're going to do.
I love that.
Do you play it cool? This may be a question for you too, Ellen. Like, when you shoot in the studio, like, do you play it cool when you see something? Like, or are you just like, I mean, do you, like, is it like unprofessional to let someone know how much you like something? I guess that's my question, because I, of course, like, don't do that at all. I tell them everything.
No, I think I'm effusive. I think that maybe my effusiveness doesn't come off that excited, because I'm you know, I've been told I'm a little bit low-key. But I think if you're a creative person, like, if so, I'm writing a story and someone tells me they love my story, I'm like, thank you. So I think that the same thing must apply to, you know, these designers, creative directors who slave away for these collections, often for multiple years. Yeah. So, and are really kind of pushing things. So I think if someone does something exceptional, yeah, I'd tell them.
Of course. I think it has to be earnest. Yeah. That's the thing. And
right.
I'm often surrounded by a lot of people who are either, you know, I don't know, PR types, creative director types, and there's a lot of kind of feigned excitement on set all the time, which always I'm very allergic to, and I tend to then, when somebody turns up, I tend to turn down. You know, that's sort of my natural impulse. So when I see somebody doing that in one side of the room, I'm immediately like, okay, I'm going to be over here and I don't need to participate in this, you know, clown show. But I don't need to be part of that, because I wasn't raised by animals. And I was also raised to, like, speak my truth. So
you're raised in Germany, so you keep it kind of chilled.
You keep it chill, but when people do exceptional work, you get excited for them, but it's also rare to see exceptional work, which, as it should be.
Yeah.
Not everything is exceptional, and that's what makes it special.
Right.
When you do see it.
Yeah.
So most of the time on set, I'm probably not that chuffed about
things. You're looking at light.
I'm looking at lighting.
To do. Yeah.
You know, I'm like, is that hair out of place? Do I see too many of your pores on film? You know, it's that kind of thing. So I'm worried about those things. But I'm not like, I don't like false flattery. I think most people don't like false flattery. I think they can sense it. So I never want to be that person. And if I, even when I've sensed it kind of directed at me, that's the person I tend to sort of never go out of my way to have a conversation with again, because I'm like, oh, this is just, it's just false.
Yeah, they're blowing smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think it's always hard when people really are trying to elicit something from you.
I hate that.
And
I hate that so much.
I'm like,
if you want something from me that badly, I will never give it to you. And you can ask my husband. He will tell you that's true. No, if you want it that badly, I will never give it.
Never
you will. Is that what
never
you want? You will
it.
Never have it. Absolutely not.
God. I mean, I like. It's funny because I tell people all. I rarely see things that I hate, that I don't like. I mean, I'm kind of the opposite. Like, I kind of like.
You're like a jewelry super fan, though.
Exactly. Like,
you love.
I love
jewelry.
It all. I kind of love it all.
Yeah.
I can find something like it. You know, everyone's like, and I'm like, at the end of the day, it's a diamond. Like, it's not ugly. Like, it's. Pretty.
Well, it's
beautiful.
Always going to be pretty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I find, like, I mean, I obviously can recognize.
Actually, I take that back. I just remembered a few things that are shot recently. So
okay.
It's not always going to be pretty.
Yeah, but I just find, like, I mean, I can appreciate a number of aesthetics.
Yeah.
I can write to a number of aesthetics. I can appreciate it. Like, it's rare that I'm like, I don't like that. Like, it's interesting. And then, but of course, I can also identify the real savants, you know, and the moments. And I also like accessible, great stuff as well.
Yeah.
Well, it's also like, there's a lot of meh. There's a lot of things that are just boring.
Oh,
and
too much.
There's
of
a lot
You're
of
right.
That.
Oh my God, so much sameness.
So, you know, I think if someone's trying to elicit some sort of, you know, I'll say, oh, it's great. Those are great stones. Nice color. I mean, but I can't fake it.
Well, at a certain point at Vegas, I'm just like, I got nothing for you. Oh, and I'll tell them, I'm like, I have nothing. I have nothing to
the
give
you. The tank has been spent.
I'm like, I can't. I
Vegas
have nothing.
Vegas is a different thing,
No
though.
Amount of coffee
whole...
can get, can I can't.
Yeah, Vegas
so
is a whole fucking
really
situation
hard.
There.
Oh, I love Vegas.
You do?
I love it.
The place or the
I mean, not
shit?
The city, please.
Yeah,
I
please. Mean. Please. Don't lie to me to my
show.
Face in my own home.
I like it
Tanya
too. By
Dukes.
The fourth day, I'm like dead.
Yeah.
Brain dead.
No, no. Ugh.
Probably because I've been playing the slots.
You know, if I said this before, and I think this is so true, if New York is like all the things about this country that are great, the best of America, Vegas is literally the inverse. It's the worst of America.
Brought
it's
to
all
you
the
by
bad
the Vegas tourist.
You'll see me at JCK with my press pass that I had to ask for.
Oh,
they'll definitely give it to me now.
So one thing I think we're both wondering is, like, what's a story that you've written recently that you're really proud of?
Gosh, I think something that, well, fairly recently I wrote a story about zircons because, most people, I think hear that word and they think cubic zirconia, which is not actually the case. It's a, you know, precious gemstone. It's, or semi-precious, I guess, technically, but that's used in fine jewelry by incredibly creative, imaginative designers. And it kind of gets short shrift. And it's one of those things that's almost there. It's kind of like a dark horse. Mm-hmm. And so doing my rounds with designers like Alice Ciccolini or Ray Griffiths or all these people, they'd say, you know, I really love the zircon. And so I just kept hearing it kind of pop up. And so I did a story about how zircons are not the stone you think they are. They're a precious stone that are used by these incredible designers. And a lot of the stories I write are, you know, the people who are featured in them are happy and, you know, we'll repost them on Instagram or whatever. But everywhere I went for weeks afterwards, like, oh, that zircon story. Like, I love it. I love zircons. I'm so happy you wrote about it. People don't understand the stone. And so I think it, when you feel like you've brought more clarity to something or you really kind of moved the needle in a way in the industry, or that always is a nice thing.
Oh my God. What if she sparks a run on zircons at JCK? What if the AGTA pavilion is just like, we're sold out of zircons?
Zircons are all gone.
Tanya did it. Tanya's done it again.
Oh, God. I should have bought some.
Why did that... what was compelling about zircons to you specifically?
Well, I think they're really beautiful. Like, okay. They have a really... Like, they have more kind of brilliance and fire than diamonds. They come in these great colors. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of designers really like them, like working with them, and think they look fantastic. So it just felt kind of underappreciated in a certain way because people don't even realize that this is a real gemstone as opposed to some sort of man-made thing. I was kind of happy with that.
That's great.
Like it communicated something.
Kind of the education of the lay audience. Mm-hmm. I imagine most of the time, it's just non-jewelry people, it has to dictate what jewelry people then end up doing, right? Because how do you then do the education and the explanation of like, no, this is worth you purchasing and this is why it's great and this is why it's not, you know, what you think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm always... kind of really impressed by people who in an industry do the educational work of that kind of thing. Because before I started doing what I did, I knew nothing about jewelry.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I was not at all a jewelry person. I'm still technically not really like a huge jewelry person. I'm really not. I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, I like a little gold.
So I see.
Like, just a tiny...
I'll touch.
Just a tiny nothing I threw on for you today. Just to make myself presentable.
Thank you.
But, you know, it's not... what I think is often the issue within the jewelry community, as I see it, and I still feel very much like an outsider looking in, is it tends to be a little bit of an echo chamber. And you're talking amongst people who are very well-versed in, you know, those gemstones and those topics, and they understand and can speak to those already, right? It's a different thing than when you talk to a lay person. I can talk to any of my lay friends who are not jewelry people at all, and they would be, you know, it would... go completely over their heads, even the difference between like 14K gold and 18K gold, stuff like that. They're sort of very like basic to most jewelry individuals. So that kind of educational work, I think, is great because it probably also helps to open up more people to the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think compared to when, you know, you and I, Amy, started, I think that there's just so much more awareness of fine jewelry as a category for consumers at kind of all different levels of the market. So... When we got started, I think, especially at the fashion magazines, I feel like jewelry was kind of shunted to the side. No one really wanted the market but I think it's just much more appreciated now. And I think hopefully enough education kind of keeps that ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's crowded too. There's so much more. I mean, there's just
the people
many more
who
designers.
Make it.
Yes, there's so much
the
more.
The designers are certainly crowded, but I still feel like your average consumer out there in the world who is maybe a fashionista, maybe a big fashion person, that sort of thing, hasn't been sort of indoctrinated yet into the jewelry market. I think there's plenty of room still to do that. There's so many people who don't even know what to look for or haven't seen the things that would excite them if they did see
them. Right, like they don't even know who Lydia Cortell is or whatever, you know, like they just, they're like, I follow Cartier and Boucheron, but
the
not,
the names that
you know.
You're so familiar with and that Tanya is so familiar with, you know, most of my friends living down the block would be like, I have no clue who the fuck you're talking about. And that's still very much the case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that that kind of education is a big part of growing the industry in general. And it's good for everybody at the end of the day.
Well, let's hope. I mean, I think we want to keep the ball rolling. And I think, you know, all those big brands, you know, they're gateway drugs to the Lydias and Marie Lichtenbergs and all of those people. Yes.
Marie Lichtenberg.
I'm obsessed with her.
I love her. She's we just aired, at the time of recording this, it's the most recent episode that we posted. And that interview was so much fun. And she's so lovely and so charming and so beautiful and so funny and so charismatic and so talented.
Yeah.
I love her work.
I love her. Yeah, she's fantastic. She's got everything. She's firing on all cylinders. You want to dislike her because she's so fantastic
in
every way.
She walked in and I said, you bitch, get out of my house. I didn't actually. I asked her if she wanted to marry me, and then she pointed to her husband who was here as well. I was like, oh, okay.
I didn't meet
apparently
him.
It was a vibe. Apparently it was definitely
it was
a whole vibe.
It was a whole vibe. Yeah.
She brings the vibe.
She brings the vibe, that's fantastic. But it's like designers like that, I think if more people outside of the jewelry kind of bubble knew about them, they would get much more excited about jewelry as a whole and sort of what is possible with jewelry.
Yeah. And I always find it strange that more people don't embrace jewelry as something to buy.
I don't. And I'll tell you why. As somebody who wasn't a big jewelry fan before, and for no particular reason, there is such a blockage and such a kind of inaccessibility to all the other brands beyond the established stuff. People don't even know where to access it. They don't know where to find it. If I'm walking through Soho, I might stumble across a store. I might not even look twice at it because I'm so unfamiliar with it. You know, I might spot a Majori or something and say, I've heard of that, or I've seen that advertised to me on Instagram, that kind of thing. But beyond that, it's really, really tough. If you're not a connoisseur of jewelry, if you're not somebody actively seeking it, you're just not exposed to it. And that's a big problem with, I always feel, you can tell me your thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the modes in which the industry operates as a whole, and I would include some of the larger jewelry publications in this as well, is they're very, very dated.
Mm.
They're very dated in the way that they speak to their consumer. They presume, I think, things about the consumer that are not entirely true. I think a lot of them underestimate the consumer as well. And I think the ways in which a lot of designers, maybe not the super hot young designers work, but a lot of the kind of more established indie designers operate is also kind of stuck in the 80s. And that's just it's not sexy or appealing to a young consumer.
Well, that's interesting thought. I mean, with social media, with everything else, I always feel like... Mm-hmm. There's so many ways to access. I mean, if you look at, like, speaking of the Gemma Award, Cynthia Erivo and her Instagram, and she's got amazing pieces. And so I'm thinking,
but how many Cynthia Erivos are there out there?
Well,
doing what she does.
We don't have a lot of brand ambassadors,
and also
you know?
A That's lot, and also in the jewelry world, outside of the big brands, they're independent designers. They don't necessarily have the bandwidth to. You know, reach out or the budget to reach out and find
get that access
That they that would benefit you know them and
absolutely I understand the reasons why I wish that we were more as an industry consumer facing because I think this is where we struggle a lot. I think it's a lot of like-minded people talking to other like-minded people, and I do wish that there was a way for us to be more consumer facing.
What do you recommend?
Well, I think what they're attempting over at Gem and Jewel is an interesting idea.
Yes.
They're trying to push content that is specifically directed at a consumers. We don't really have jewelry publications that point to consumers specifically in that way, where their only missive is to just speak to a consumer directly, right? You have like inserts and stuff like that. You have like a French Vogue bijou, you know, you have things like this, right? But how?
It's hard. I mean, there used to be a W Jewelry.
Yes.
That's right.
Well, I remember.
Yes.
I loved that magazine.
It was so great.
I loved that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be an L Accessories. I think they're not around anymore either.
Yeah.
So it's a shame that those things have gone away because I think it would hugely benefit the entirety of the industry. And if we kind of made more jewelry fans out of people, we all win from that. Especially me, because I love taking your money. in exchange for photos. So that's, you know, that benefit, this is purely selfish on my
totally,
end too.
Now we are getting to the bottom of it.
As my socialist father would say, and I agree with him on this 1,000%, when we all do well, we all do well. This is something he said to me
man.
My whole life. Very wise man.
I agree.
Yeah. So I think that we, as an industry, we could work harder to make jewelry fans out of people.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're just... As the media landscape kind of narrows,
yes, it's harder.
It's getting even harder, mm-hmm. and I think so. People are looking to social, and those are really that's the main point of entry for so many people.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm.
I really like it when you know Instagram sellers or designers really talk to the customer. I think
yes.
that's part of it. I love when they're just like, "Let's talk about this." They'll educate you mm-hmm. on something,
yes. mm-hmm.
or they'll just be like, "Yeah, I'm just looking at these gemstones. Like, what do you think I should do with them?" Like, I think that's helpful.
I think that helps hugely, mm-hmm. and I think like articles like the one you're talking about, Tanya, that you wrote helps hugely. It's all those little bits of education. I think even, you know, speaking of Marie again, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to keep plugging her, I promise. But, you know, even somebody like her, whose whole vibe is just cool and very fashion,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what brings people my generation mm-hmm. and younger in.
Yeah, yeah.
We see that and we think, oh, jewelry is cool.
It is
great.
Because in your initial perception is like, it's stuffy, it's diamonds, it's this and that.
I can't afford it in a million
years.
And
it's inaccessible. You know? It's inaccessible and it's stuffy, but it's also like not cool. You know what I mean? That's sort of the initial perception for most younger people. Listen, you can believe me or not, but I'll tell you, I can bring in 10 friends right now off the street who will tell you the same thing.
It's your moms. They don't want their mom's engagement ring. They don't want their mom's, you know,
that's the thing.
I mean, maybe they want her like herringbone chain
that's
from like
thing.
1990, mm-hmm. but like,
exactly.
you're right. Like it's kind of rooted in this like grande dame.
Exactly.
World.
And it lacks the kind of edge and cool factor that fashion sort of is obsessed with always, you know, garnering and sort of cultivating those aesthetics.
Yeah.
So when you get a designer like Marie, it's like, no, you're on, that's the track.
Yeah, she has a
that's
definite
the move.
Point of view.
That's how we get those people excited about it.
No,
then.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
No, she's a poster child for this and has an
yes.
amazing point of view. And,
mm-hmm.
So I definitely get that. But and also things like, you know, things that are accessible to price, like Midjourney and
yes.
has that sort of marketing and wherewithal to at least get people excited and then they keep going. And mm-hmm. so that's what I hope for.
That helps too. Exactly.
Gateway.
Exactly. There's gateways. You do that and you explore jewelry and then, you know, I don't know, the algorithm God starts sending
mm-hmm.
more jewelry
yeah.
your way because
right.
you just walked into a Midjourney or mentioned it to a friend and our phones are listening to us. And, you know, and it's
cruise ship ads coming your way.
Oh my God. That's what I'm waiting for. That or like escorting websites.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
Thank you for that, Amy.
Sorry.
I'm going to have to explain that to Andrew when he gets home. And he pulls up, you know, fucking Apple TV and all, sees what ads are. Why is it ads for cruise ships and prep? What is happening?
Oh,
what are you doing when I'm not at home? And I'll be like, Amy Elliott, Miss, and I won't say it.
Miss.
Did this to me.
Yep.
No, don't say it, Tanya.
Apologies.
Okay. We're not saying it. We're not saying it.
The name that won't be
I wanted to add to this conversation just that I also... No, just...
She's like moving away from this as quickly as possible.
No.
But like, I just feel like a lot of consumers are, you know, in that demo, like much fast fashion. I mean, Shein and Kupshe and, you know, and I consume
but
it too.
There's a big move against that.
Yes.
I will tell you.
Okay.
There's a huge push against all of that stuff because I'm telling you, my generation and younger is very fed up with all of that garbage.
Timu garbage.
1,000%. It's my generation and younger who are the ones saying, stop buying that shit. Shit, go to a fucking secondhand store.
Exactly.
Well, that's
you
the
know?
Problem, even it's, though that so much, it used to be that you could find something amazing mm-hmm. in a vintage store. Now all you're seeing is the cast off fast fashion.
We read the
that's
same article,
it.
I'm sure.
But that's it. But that's spot on. That's very true.
And that's what I mean about being surprised that people aren't jumping onto mm-hmm. the jewelry bandwagon a little bit more.
Because
it's a different sensibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the bracelets I have, my kid can wear and my grandkid can wear. And
it's forever.
And frankly, the price is like you can. I mean, we all know about certain handbags that are now to get an entry level version
well,
is
could, like pull all the
$10,000
and like really like
are
have
you kidding?
A,
yeah.
go on a trip.
Yeah,
several.
Yes,
several. In fact,
yes.
But that is a great point, and this is sort of another point where I think And I don't blame kind of the jewelry industry for this. This is just one of those things that isn't out in the, you know, in the zeitgeist enough. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, you know, we talk about, and you've done articles about this, I'm sure you have probably too, Tanya, about sustainability in jewelry, and that's a hot topic, and we talked about it at length. And it's important, and it's important for us to have those sustainable practices. We're also one of the least wasteful industries out there, just by nature of what it is that we do. It is one of the least, when you compare, even, let's say, horrific practices at diamond mines, which are deplorable and disgusting in the way that they can destroy, have the potential to destroy, not everybody does this, but can destroy the natural environment and local economies and disrupt them in a big way. All of this stuff is true. But if you compare that, or you compare like the harm done by any independent jeweler, let's say even somebody who was very established, been around for a long time, to what a Shein, what an H&M, what all of those companies do, the way that fashion is wasteful and destructive and polluting, we are a tiny, tiny fraction of what contributes to the real kind of large-scale problems with sustainability, climate change,
all that. Yeah, fashion is incredibly, in terms of water and usage, everything else, it's one of the highest polluting.
The waste it produces, I mean, as an industry, it's one of the most polluting out there. And it's also, if you think about, like, you know, the farmland that's converted to grow textiles for cotton, silk farms in Asia, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all of this stuff is hugely destructive. And it's destructive on a scale that, honestly, jewelry, you couldn't hope to be that destructive. It would take a lot, you know. But obviously, jewelry contributes to all of those things as well, especially when you're talking about mining, you know, precious metals and that kind of thing. Mining practices. All of that is true. I'm just saying, on a relative scale, if you compare industries.
Sure. I mean, it's hard to feel good about saying, well, we are less
terrible
than the fashion.
Yeah.
But I take your point, and I think, you know,
But
materials
point,
are recycled in jewelry. I mean, so there's
that, which there's is impossible with clothing in many ways.
Well, clothing has a shelf life.
But the bigger point to me is there's also an opportunity then to say to younger consumers, listen, if you're looking for things that have longevity, that are forever, and where, you know, you can sort of make good purchasing decisions, and you certainly can. It's very possible in jewelry for you to go to somebody and to, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of the mechanics of this kind of stuff, but hopefully you can get a diamond with relative ease that you know is conflict-free, that you know has been mined responsibly, etc. Hopefully you can...
Fair mined gold
and recycled gold, and you can go to those people and you can buy something that lasts a lifetime where your kind of cost per wear is negligible considering, you know, how long you'll have the thing.
Yeah.
So, I think there could be more emphasis on that as well for those young consumers who care very deeply about, you know, climate change and the future of this planet, which we should all care about very deeply.
Yeah.
So again, not that jewelry is sinless. It certainly isn't. But if you compare it to, like, you know, any other things, buying furniture. Do you know what it takes to make a fucking couch and how sort of disgusting those practices are too?
Formaldehyde,
the dyes, the garbage that's inside your couch. Like, all of... Yes!
It's you put a kid on it and forget it.
Yeah.
Breathe deep, sweetie.
Yeah.
I know, it's...
Breathe in, darling. Breathe it all in.
I also think, I'm always like, let me just take it down a little bit. Layaway is like really great.
Layaway is great.
You know,
Klarna. There's nothing wrong with that.
Like, so I, you know, yes, like young folk, like
Klarna,
you can
Swedish, therefore probably does things better than most.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. That makes me like it even more.
I didn't realize.
But, like,
that was,
if you're just like, I can only afford fast fashion, but I can't afford fine jewelry. Yes, you can. You can, like, you know, you can shop with a vintage dealer or whatever, and you can use Klarna.
You could use Klarna and buy that jewelry in 4 easy installments with Klarna. Please sponsor us.
I know. New sponsor.
Klarna, you can have one too. See, I'll give you a jingle.
A jingle. You guys are working overtime.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
God, that's so funny.
Jesus fucking Christ. We're trying to pay some bills over here.
Oh my God.
Klarna. Fucking Swedes. They have money. They're sitting on gas. Come on.
Oh, but
give us our cut.
I want to get to some of my more of my Tanya questions.
Sorry. Like, I would like to go back to. I'm like,
can we just go back to like the light and lively? Like, so sorry.
No, we like it hard.
I know.
And heavy.
No, I do too. Hard hitting.
Hard hitting. This is long form, hard, serious journalism, Amy. I've told you before.
No, it is, and I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Do you? Sure. You knew that this was. What the show was.
You want to put the screws to me. I knew it.
Yep. She knew it?
I'm asking the tough questions. Rachel Maddow style right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, let's go. What's the tough question? No,
that's not a tough question.
How much have you contributed to climate change today, Tanya?
Oh, God. I took the subway here. Does that help?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
I left my jet at home.
I'll allow it.
What is your, because you go to so many more events than I do, major industry events, like, and have throughout your career. Like, what's your favorite one?
Oh, God. I mean, I do...
Boy, that we did just go like way left.
Yep. Yeah. I'm like speaking of boarding planes.
Yeah.
Speaking of boarding planes, yeah. And...
And when you go to this event, do you charter?
Do I charter? I try and hitch a ride with, you know, one of my...
With somebody rich.
With someone rich.
I
fabulous.
Love that. Yeah. I love that. Hitch that ride, girl. Let's go.
Well, that was a joke. I don't know.
Those people I thought you were serious. I was like, who are you chartering with?
I'm like, before people start thinking that hanging out with Tay Tay and Travis. I haven't been since Alice was born, hopefully this year. Paris Couture is fabulous because you're in Paris.
Of course. So. Well, that doesn't even... You just go to be in Paris.
I kind of.
Like, who cares about anything else at that point?
Basically.
I'm sure Couture is great there, but...
Yeah.
You know, you're going to go to Paris.
I'm going to go to Paris.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes. Let's not.
What is it like? Do you have like is your schedule just like 9 to 6 or like, or is it just more leisurely?
You have
time to shop. You have time to meet people for lunch.
Definitely have time for like drinks and lunch and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are events kind of peppered out throughout the day, but it's definitely not hard.
You know, props.
It's not a hardship.
I have to say props to Amy for reeling this interview back in. You got to give the lady credit.
Listen, this is like, I have access to Tanya. I need to ask her all my questions.
She's like, I have a list. I had a plan. Yep. And you're mucking it up. Yeah.
No, it's. I love how this conversation is
I'm
going.
I'm the derailer.
And I've learned. No,
I see that.
I've learned things. So it's helpful.
Yeah. So your life is very difficult, you were saying.
My life is very hard. Yeah. I go to Paris. Yeah. And
mine too.
And
I know. I suffer.
And you used to go for fashion. You used to like actually go to like the fashion shows.
When I was on staff, I would go for the, I would go to, do Milan, Florence, Paris.
Wow.
I mean, that's probably a little harder.
That was hard. I mean, that was really brutal. Like,
okay, I lived through a genocide, Tanya. Calm the fuck down. Okay, I lived through a fucking genocide. Don't tell
me
about
it. Same, right?
Same, right. Yeah, okay. See, this is how we get her canceled. We take that clip out of context, put it on fucking, what are the kids on? What is it called?
The TikTok.
TikTok. Put it on a TikTok. Yeah. It's a wrap.
Oh, I'm done.
It's a wrap.
It was nice knowing you guys. Yep.
Career ended.
Oh, jeez. So same. And, uh-huh. But it was
really grueling. Yeah.
It was really grueling because also like I was working at a very small magazine. So in Milan there was a car, but in Paris there was no car, and so you're
they
just
don't
like
give you a car.
There was no car.
Did it get you a hotel?
Oh my god!
Hold on,
like,
have
I'm
a cry.
Best Western.
Have a cry, please. Have a cry. Get it. Get the poison out, Tanya. Get the poison out.
And there was no car.
Yeah.
And so
trauma.
You know,
generational trauma.
This is like chromosomal.
Chromosomal.
Changes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Your daughter is going to be suffering from this when she's older. She'll be in therapy.
So, but it was hard. It was, you know, because you're there doing shows all day and then you still have to go back to your room and write and do other things and pull for shoes that are going to happen.
Job, the part of it.
Yeah. So it's not like I just got to swan around again.
Can I ask you something a little uncouth?
Yes.
Are you getting paid while doing all that shit?
No, of course not.
Of course not, right? They're probably paying you like nothing. What does that pay? What is that gig?
What,
pay?
A junior editor job?
Back then? Nothing. You'd be
nothing.
Shocked. You'd be
really?
Shocked.
Embarrassed.
You would be
really?
Horrified.
You would be, yeah.
You would be horrified.
And yet give
everybody wanted those gigs. This was the dream.
The cost of living was so, you got to think, the cost of living, you could get an apartment for $800
thanks,
a month.
Thanks, Obama.
I mean, so,
oh,
like,
man. Not
I'm kidding. I'm
the
kidding.
The cost of living. Like,
I'm a socialist. I'm kidding.
Yeah, no,
come
he's
on.
Like, I mean, the, I mean, look, I'll put this into context, okay? My starting salary at any job, it was at Bantam Books and Publishing, was $20,000 a year.
A year? What?
Yes. Now you understand.
I was 21.
But
and
you
it
were
was
working
publishing.
Full time. You were yes. working full time.
Yes, I was.
It wasn't an internship. After a couple of years, I was like, I'm this not going to be a lifer as a lawyer. I'm going to save a lot of money and then.
So let me ask you this. You're fresh off of being young, successful attorney. Mm-hmm. You decide to make that huge career shift. Mm-hmm. You land this gig, you're traveling, and it's glamour, whatever, bullshit, you know, yes. that kind of thing. I like to say regret is only the awareness that time is finite. But did you have regret?
I'd never had regret.
You were very like, I'll make it through this and I'll land somewhere better? Or what was kind of your ambition when you got into the industry and you were in the position that you were in?
Mm. Oh, that's a good question. I think that...
Oh, I got one. I got one today.
Well, I think that the work was... I was doing the kind of work I wanted to do, which is that I was writing, that I was traveling. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept the faith that I would keep climbing in some way and up the ladder.
Speaking of that, what did that look like then? If the ambition was to keep climbing up the ranks, what did that look like for you at the time?
I think just getting a better title at a better publication. And unfortunately, as Amy and I have borne witness to,
it didn't look like freelance. You know, staying up at midnight writing like a blog post. No. Mm-hmm.
No, mm-hmm. no. And I think that when I entered the media, mm-hmm. print was still king.
Yes.
And so if I had gotten in 5 or 10 years earlier, I think it would have been a lot easier. And uh-huh. if I had gotten in 5 years later, it would have been all about web. And so I feel like for my career, the timing was tough because I didn't jump on the web bandwagon early. Mm-hmm. And
I see.
I was at the tail end of print. So I think that that was really
you
challenging.
You were there ringing in the death knell.
Right there. And Emily feels the same way. Emily was laid off. I mean, we all, like our generation, Gen X, like we really just timed it horribly.
It was tough timing in that respect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think I imagined that I would go, you know, somewhere else and did briefly, but then the jobs kept disappearing.
So when you were doing that, you were doing that for a solid what?
I was on staff at various magazines for probably about a little over a decade.
A little over 10 years, let's say. Yeah. You were doing that and you were kind of doing the hustle, both of you, for as things kind of were on the way out. Mm-hmm. As you were sort of watching what was happening around you, were you at any point thinking, huge mistake? Or were you thinking, I'll evolve and I'll figure it out?
I think it was more of a I'll figure it out. Because at that point, what choice do you have?
And none.
And then I just didn't want to be a lawyer. So it's like, maybe I'll go to business school and do something else that's kind of related to this. But I don't think I ever said, well, geez, I wish I had never gotten on this route at all.
At all.
And so that's, you know, salvation that you don't have that sort of that deep-seated regret. But yeah, it was definitely challenging. It was hard. And
listen, regret is only the awareness that time is finite.
That's it.
That's all that is. And it's okay to feel it. Let me ask you this then. When, given the position that you're in now, which is different, because you're kind of your own boss, as you said earlier, it's entrepreneurial, right? It's like you're running your own business, really.
Right.
Do you find that as fulfilling as it's kind of the plot and the plan and the ambitions that you had before, working in a more structured environment and having a ladder to climb and that sort of thing?
You know, it's really funny. I guess I'm at this point where I've worked for 20 years in this sector and really love it. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I do most and love most is kind of the longer form feature stories and the opportunities for that.
Like what we do here at Rough Cutting. Yes. The serious stuff. Yeah.
And weeks of reporting.
Weeks.
Yes.
Weeks.
And yeah. And so I am, you know, at this point where I'm regrouping, I guess.
Interesting.
Because I don't know. I love pitching stories and writing stories and all that stuff. But, and I don't want to have to do a lot of the things that I just feel like I've done too many of already. And so I'm trying
feel free to send some of those like sloppy seconds to me.
No.
because I'm trying to send my kid to camp.
Oh god,
not for sloppy seconds.
Please feel free to just punt that to me, Tanya.
Oh my gosh, you know I
and
had
you
a
have
friend,
referred me on several occasions, yes, so thank
I
was, you. Yeah,
yeah. I will tell you, I had a friend like that, but in very different context. Okay. And
oh,
about
man.
Something very different. Yes.
Sample, the, sloppy, sample the merchandise.
Yes,
and
yes,
then, yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah, yep. Yeah.
How did I get here?
See, I told you.
Now
told
I understand you why you asked here. Me why am I here.
Why did you agree to this? Why did you actually show up? Very weird. Yeah. You're like a respected person.
I know.
Reputation.
I was like, I don't know if he's going to say yes. I will try.
And then she actually showed up and I thought, wow, big mistake.
Big, huge.
Huge. Huge. Huge.
I want to, yeah. Can I just ask my question? Okay. I want to make everybody jealous. And this is this sort of piggybacks off of like your favorite shows of the year. Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we were talking about the glory days of editorial, which yes. we experienced and then we're booted out of.
Yep.
What is the most like extravagant, wonderful experience you had that you still remember as just like knock your socks off, the best sort of like experience that you had I'm going to assume traveling for your job where you were just got the royal treatment. Like, what do you remember? Like, what will you tell Alice about when she's like 15?
Golden years.
I mean, there were some pretty, especially because I did cover travel as well. So, mm-hmm. 1 year, Louis Vuitton had, they were opening in Shanghai two flagships on the same day.
Yeah. That already sounds perfect. Yeah.
So I flew to Shanghai and we went to all of their celebrations for these two flagship openings. And then there was the private dinner and long played. And it was just
delicious.
Kind of delicious. It was a few days of dinners and with hanging with the CEO and. So it was pretty intense.
Small group or big junket?
It was. Well, I think I was the only American writer, but mm-hmm. yeah, it was not a huge group of people. So that was pretty.
Did you have to
major.
Like wear like that was anything like wonderful. Black tie? Did you have to wear a gown?
I
she wanted to wear the gown. She didn't have.
I know
to wear
it's
the
never
gown.
Really a labor to wear a gown. I mean, I'm sure it was a pretty. It wasn't black tie, but I think it was kind of a
did
fancy.
You took
care with your outfits.
Yes.
Did Louis Vuitton dress you for the dinner?
God, that's a good question. Oh, I can't remember.
Oh.
I don't, probably not, probably okay. not. Okay. Yeah. I can't
that remember. Sounds dreamy.
That sounds fantastic. Can I ask an offshoot? I know
yep,
you said this is your last official.
I've covered my
she's like,
ground.
She's like, I'm done and I'm through with this bullshit of trying to rein in this interview. So
I'm like,
I'm going to take
a sip of my coffee.
I'm going to sit back. Slightly controversial question.
Oh, God.
Get ready. Hot seat. Tanya. No, in all seriousness, the older I've gotten and the more that I've engaged with this industry in particular, this is not a criticism on the business. It's not a criticism on any individuals in the business. I think it's great that people are doing what they do, that they're able to make a living. I think it's fabulous, wonderful. And I've made a very good living off of this industry too. So I'm not complaining about any of that stuff. But given all of that, the older I get, the more I find I've become like my father, and the more I see everything that's happening in the world around me, I grow to, I guess, resent. A part of me grows to start to resent the luxury space because it all starts to feel so frivolous at the end of the day. And I never quite know how to square sort of, my work self with my political self and with my, you know, all of those elements. And it's a constant kind of internal struggle. But the older I get, the harder I find it to keep those things separate. Sort of even in a working environment. Do you ever struggle with that? Given sort of how long you've been in the industry, given what you see, and you're an educated person, you're an aware person. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I understand. I think I've had the privilege of seeing the people who make these things at work. And so I know that what they are doing is often a small business that is dealing with other small businesses, whether it's gems or, you know, manufacturers or small workshops that are in these little Warren-like spaces on 48th Street or whatever it is, 47th Street. And so I guess I don't see it so much as a monolithic luxury industry, so much as a place or kind of a craft tradition in a lot of places. And just like, God, no one needs jewelry, obviously. But by the same token, you know, no one needs a painting, no one needs art, but we still want to engage with those things and that they're beautiful and are, you know, heirlooms or yes. thought-provoking. And so I see jewelry in that same sort of vein. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these things are going to be precious to us. I think that the fact that someone else is suffering somewhere mm-hmm. does not mean that we should not appreciate this tradition, this craft that mm-hmm. other people are also, you know, struggling to kind of keep alive in some way. So it's there's a lot of integrity. There's a lot of real, you know, creativity and love that goes into this mm-hmm. work. Mm-hmm. And so I think that jewelry, there are a lot of political wrongs happening.
Yes.
But I can't put them at the door of jewelry mm-hmm. and the fact that some of these things are expensive. And, you know, it's also, I get more upset when prices or value is kind of, or prices are decoupled from value.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that really kind of drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, obviously, like you were talking about in the fashion context, some of these yes. things, prices are just
obscene.
Pricing feels arbitrary sometimes.
Yeah, it's you're paying thousands of dollars for polyester. I'm happy to pay for value.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to pay for the craftsmanship. I'm happy to pay for the materials. I have no issue with that. And of course, I accept the fact that I'm also paying a markup for the brand.
Yes.
Fine. You take your cut. I don't begrudge you that. But don't hand me a piece of polyester and try and sell it to me for $2,500. So that's one thing that the jewelry industry certainly is not guilty of.
Exactly.
As far as that goes.
Right.
Because there is inherent value, sort of intrinsic accepted kind of global value to the things that we end up purchasing here. I think you answered that question beautifully, and you totally dodged my gotcha in such a beautiful way.
You did. And I would just like to interject that I have had a similar experience when I go to my local Marshalls.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I can't
don't
believe
come
you,
from
are,
Marshalls.
You are asking.
We'll explain what Marshalls is to you later.
Yeah, I know you don't really know what that is, but like, I'm just
this
like,
is not
are
a
you?
Clothing
I'm like,
store, is it?
You are, it is.
Yes.
Oh, it is a clothing
it's
store.
It's a discount.
Oh, I knew it.
Yes.
I knew. Call me out of touch again.
I will. So, I mean, I'm like, you want me to pay $15.99 for this shirt? It
oh,
is clearly a $10.99 shirt, and it's too expensive.
Oh, my God.
So I feel your pain. I'm, like, right there with
it's
you.
It's very much the same thing, Amy. It's very much the same thing. I agree with you.
Same,
I'm
same.
Full agreement. Same, same. I have one more for you.
Oh, boy.
That, get ready.
I'm really going to get canceled.
No, but you answered that question beautifully, and you're definitely not getting canceled.
And I agree with you.
Canceled. Yeah, and you're definitely not getting canceled after that. I mean, we'll certainly try. But my other question for you was then, kind of given the amount that you see and given the time that you've spent in the industry, I'm very curious about your take on this, because I had this conversation recently with a well-known established jeweler.
Mm-hmm.
And I plan on asking this as many people as I can, because he had some incredibly controversial things to say that I think people are going to find controversial. I didn't, you know, I was, you know.
Is this going to be on the pod?
I don't know what this is. I don't
know
what you're talking
about. Going to be on the pod.
Ooh.
Oh, yes. This is a surprise that's going to be on the pod.
Oh, amazing. I'm totally like,
yeah,
as usual.
I'll tell you
as usual, I'm like, what?
No. I'll tell you all the details, like, because this happened very recently, and it was a very last minute kind of engagement, because this guy is, you know, from New Zealand and difficult to get a hold of and that kind of thing. So his take was that jewelry can't be really called or classified as art
mm-hmm.
as long as, get ready, as long as you're using a CAD to design mm-hmm. or a mold of that nature to design and produce the piece, that it's too, at that point, divorced
mm-hmm.
from human hands to be called art, which to me kind of also is an arbitrary distinction, because plenty of people would consider photography art. I am completely divorced from the physical process of creating mm-hmm. A photograph, to the point that, you know, my poor assistant Stephanie sets up the lights for me on set. I don't even touch those. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I'm very much, my hands are not there, and the product is entirely digital. And I'm not even talking about commercial photography. This is if you're producing fine art photography,
right,
too. This
yeah.
is the case. Do you think jewelry is art?
I think some of it can
so
rise
what,
to that.
What makes
that,
that distinction for you?
Well, I think it is, you know, a matter of personal vision. Are mm-hmm. we doing something that is not anywhere else, that you feel like it is really of a singular mind, that the execution is of a certain level. I mean, when I think of someone like Wallace Chan or something, like that is, for me, it's art. Maybe someone else thinks of it as applied craft or art, you know, in a different vein. But I think it's just so imaginative, so beautifully rendered, so, you know, singular that it's...
Is it the kind of auteur kind of nature of it?
Yeah.
The single person, the single individual, and... That's sort of what makes it, takes it to that level for you?
Yeah, I think, but I think there's artistry and, of course, jewelry that is not of that ilk. But, so I don't know that I really quibble that much whether people call it art or not. But I think if some is classified in that way, I think that those are the people, the Wallace Chans or maybe the...
Cindy Chow
or Taffin or Taffin. Those people who really kind of set the bar so high in terms of every aspect of production and creation.
Hammerle.
And vision. Yeah, Hammerle. I love. So I think that there is a subset if you want to quibble and say there are certain people who are artists in this field. I think that that's where I would start.
Obviously. Can commerce and can any product created for the sole purposes of commerce be art?
I would say yes.
You would say yes?
Yes. I mean, Picasso sold his paintings.
Yeah.
Every artist sells their work at a certain point. But they would, you know, it's always through this kind of conceit of this, that isn't really the intention. Yeah. Or that this isn't the end game for that, which, you know, whether that's true or not, whatever. Listen, I worked at an art gallery when I first moved to New York. And... that's utter bullshit as far as I'm concerned because of the conversations that I've also overheard directors having with artists, where the directors are even coming up with like, oh, this is the story for this piece because if you attach this story to this, I can sell it to this person, et cetera, et cetera. You know,
they call it the art market.
Exactly. It's the art market for a reason. Yeah.
But I'm these dealers that are making big bucks.
Right.
I mean, big bucks.
Exactly. And so I was just curious about your take on that, given your breadth of experience within the industry. To me, I don't find that an important question to answer.
Yeah, I guess I don't think it, I don't think it's really relevant. I look at what is the final product and what are we looking at? Mm-hmm. And so... You know,
I just think even asking that question, it sounds not you asking that question. The other person's
don't come for me in my house.
I'm not the person's hot take that CAD thing or whatever. I just feel like that's like that it's the wrong time to be asking those questions. Like it's just CAD has now. It is largely used as a problem-solving tool. It's a physics tool.
I think so.
It's physics.
It's science. You know, it's about precision, and it's about sort of production difficulty that may, in other cases, be impossible to be done by human hands. It may not. You may be able to solve the same problem in a different way by human hands, but maybe not quite as elegantly.
Jewelry art or art as jewelry is in the eyes of the beholder. I mean, you can look at one designer and be like, I don't find that to be art, and someone else.
You can do that about a painting, and you can do that about anything. Sure, absolutely. I agree with you. I was just curious because we just had this conversation quite extensively, and there are apparently jewelers, and this is kind of news to me, who feel very intensely about this topic, and who are very anti-CAD in the way that they operate. And it's, I think, in part the thing about it that is important. Is the aspect of preserving that craft tradition, right? That's the bit where I would totally concede to that point and say, yeah, I agree. I would love for more people to preserve that craft tradition because there are fewer and fewer people every day who do it.
Who don't know how to do it.
And there are fewer and fewer people every day to teach it. And that's a huge problem. It's a huge problem for the industry because I feel that it opens us up only to more sameness. And when you lose the ability to do those things by hand, you lose a certain kind of avenue for creativity that you don't have access to otherwise, right? And it makes you think in a different way about design and those things. You know, my dad made furniture by hand.
Oh, wow.
So he thinks about furniture design probably in a very, very different way than anybody who sketches it and sends it to a factory. Right?
Of course, yeah.
Not that it's the equivalent of that in jewelry, but you know what I'm getting at. It's you have to think about things in a very different way when you have to then construct them yourself by hand.
Yeah. Now, one of my things that I want to do is take a jewelry making class.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever done that?
No, but I did hammer some platinum and and fake it till I make it with the platinum gilt. That really hurt with tendonitis.
I'm sure.
I was not much good at it.
You know Tess Scholem? She is an amazing, amazing independent jeweler who's been in this business for, oh gosh, I don't want to say like 50 years, wow, something like that. And she used to, back in the day, design accessories for Christian Dior, for Karl Lagerfeld, for their runway shows. She was had a huge company in the 80s making fashion jewelry.
Oh, right.
She's an immensely talented human being. Mm-hmm. And she, to this day, is 80, I don't know how many years. I don't want to say the wrong number. She'll... Mm-mm. Slap me the next time she sees me. Makes and hammers every piece of gold herself, makes it all by hand. I think that's magnificent. I think that's extraordinary.
I love it. I mean, I've loved when you can feel the artist's presence when you just look at the piece.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful thing. So that's where I'll concede to this guy about that mattering, in that human, you know, touch and the humanity of that expression and giving it to somebody else. And I mean, there's a specialness in that you can't beat, you know?
Yeah.
So I understand that.
It has a place. I mean, of course. It has a place.
And it's wearable. I mean, it's art that's wearable. I mean,
and it's, you know, I wouldn't go out of my way to call Majori art, but I don't think that's their ambition anyway. You know, they're not there to produce high art.
There are tiers of jewelry. There's fashion jewelry. There's high jewelry. There's, you know,
Exactly. Ultimately, a question that I personally don't think is important, but one that I intend on asking as many people as possible, because I only discovered that this is apparently a point of contention very recently, and I didn't even know that was a conversation that was happening.
Yeah, it's definitely...
That's your next article, Tanya.
Maybe.
You take it.
You run with that one.
I don't want to
step into that.
Good luck with that.
Oh, God. Now I'll really get canceled.
Gosh. Well, Tanya Dukes. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for answering all our questions. And, like, it's just nice to reminisce about how far back we go.
I can't believe it.
And how far we've come. And, like, you won a Gem Award. And you're just, like, on top of your game.
Congratulations on that again.
Yes, thanks,
it's
guys.
It's very well earned and deserved. And we are so honored to have you in the show. I'm so honored to have you in my home. And I finally, after all this... years kind of bumping into you peripherally, finally got to have a conversation.
I know, we've never talked this long before.
So I'm very glad that we got to do that. Thank you for putting up.
Thank you. I'll look forward to my cancellation when this airs.
Watch for it on TikTok. First, I have to get a TikTok.
I don't have that.
I don't want the Chinese in my phone. Oh my gosh. Bam. Listen, I already have the Americans in my phone. Lord. I don't need two nations in my phone.
Oh my God.
Send hate mail too.
I was gonna say, his views are his own.
I know.
Those aren't even my views.
It's a fact.
It's getting banned anyway, right?
So. Yeah.
It's looking that way. We'll see. Exciting times we live in. Thank you again, Tanya Dukes.
Thank you, Tanya.
This has been Rough Cut. I'm Alan Simich.
I'm Amy Elliott.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.